It's Your Money with the Investor Coach, Paul Nichols, the show that pulls back the curtain on the financial services industry and exposes the truth about the traditional financial planning model. Paul believes education plus understanding leads to clarity and confidence that can and will lead to peace of mind. He uses simple solutions grounded in academic research from leading financial minds at Harvard, Yale, Princeton, and the University of Chicago, including several Nobel laureates. You do not need to know everything if you have an investor coach teaching you the few right things. Paul Nichols is the president of Financial Abundance, a registered investment advisor. He is a member of the National Ethics Bureau, the Better Business Bureau, and member of Strategic Coach Quarterly. Get ready for some common sense clarity coaching with the investor coach, Paul Nichols.
Welcome to the show. This is Paul Nichols, the investor coach, and we're pulling back the curtain on financial services matters that are of interest to you. And I have a special guest this Saturday morning, part of Coach's Corner, U.S. Congressman Glenn Thompson. Just a little bit about Glenn. Some of you may not know. I can't imagine most of you don't, but he is our local guy, our local representative. He's a longtime resident of Howard. And what really is exciting for me today, not only to talk to the congressman, but this is a gentleman who really understands the healthcare industry as a healthcare professional for 28, almost 30 years. And of course, he's in the fight right now with this whole healthcare bill, and that's what we want to talk about today. He's also a veteran of the Boy Scout and Boy Scout Council, many 30 years now, former member of the Bald Eagle School District, volunteer firefighter, and well-known in our area, certainly now. Glenn, welcome to the show.
Well, Paul, thank you very much. It's good to be with you today.
I appreciate you taking time out of your very hectic schedule to spend some time with us. And, you know, we just had a brief conversation. We wanted to focus on the healthcare, I don't know what you want to call it, plan, debate, debacle, whatever. What prompted this for me, Glenn, is I'd gotten a communique from you, the escape hatches. You recall that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That was an editorial put together, and we sent out throughout the district.
I got this, and it actually spurred my thinking because I've gotten more calls in my office as a registered investment advisor on this healthcare plan than anything else. And again, you don't know this, but my listeners, a lot of them do. Most of my clients are 50 and above, so this is really close to their heart at this point. And in this communique, escape hatches that I'd gotten from you, it talked a little bit about the state opt-out or the opt-out plan. Can you talk a little bit about that for me, Glenn, Congressman? I'm not exactly, I mean, I got the gist of it, but you never know what you hear in sound bites. Can you enlighten us a little bit about what is that plan and how can it affect Pennsylvanians?
Well, the state opt-out, it has a couple provisions with it. First of all, it requires the let me first say, first of all, it's exactly opposite of what I would suggest. I think that states should have the opportunity to opt in to the public option, as opposed to opt out. And here's the reason behind that. I mean, with the way it is designed, even if you choose to opt out of the if you choose to opt,
if the plan is instituted and you decide to opt out, there's a point you want to make, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
You're still paying the bill.
So if it's instituted and we opt out, if the state opts out at the state level, we still got to harness the bill there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So why would we opt out? That's
Well, I mean, that's a great question. I don't think there's motivation to do that versus states who would choose to be able to opt into the program. I think that, the consequences would be that as the individuals would still have to pay the various taxes and cuts. It would still be that our small businesses would share their percentage of those over $700 billion in new taxes that are being created in order to fund this healthcare bill. That medical devices that are they're purchased or manufactured. There's a 2.5% excise tax on medical devices. That'll be passed along to the consumers, and that's going to hit largely, obviously, on older adults, but certainly individuals with disabilities as well. And we're talking anywhere from simple things such as basics, such as walkers, wheelchairs. We're talking insulin pumps. Even prosthetic limbs.
Is this where this idea of death panels come from, Congressman?
No, there are no death panels within the bill, and that's something that's one of those points that really got blown out of proportion
right.
by the talking heads.
Right.
But what there is there is the fact that there is in terms of end of life discussions, there is a counselor, an individual, a bureaucrat will be certified by Medicare that will at some point, triggered by age, it's age-driven, would have a conversation with individuals regarding counseling and end-of-life decisions. Frankly, I think that's inappropriate. I think it's unnecessary. I really view that end-of-life decisions and having that discussion, that's a discussion that should occur between each of us individually and our physicians. And I think physicians have an ethical and a professional responsibility to have that discussion of what are our wishes in terms of end-of-life decisions. Is our preference to be put into place and to be taken should we be faced with some type of a life-threatening episode of health?
You know what confuses me about this type of issue, without getting right, left, or trying to stay in the middle here, is being objective, is, you know, it's that type of thing. It reminds me of the movie Logan's Run. I don't know if you ever saw that. People lived to 30, and then they had to get rid of them. But, the same people that would support that would be the same people that would be against the death penalty.
There definitely is some real irony in that debate.
So what is the biggest fear obviously you're Republican, the conservative side of the House has as it relates to this health care plan? What is it? Can we boil it down to, we meet it, it seems like there's some common ground, but it seems like the area that's not common couldn't be further opposed.
Well, I think the common ground is pretty narrow as this bill is constructed, unfortunately. I mean, I think there's common ground in terms of pre-existing conditions. Just because you were born or developed a pre-existing condition doesn't mean that you shouldn't have access from purchasing affordable health care insurance.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're all on board with that. Now, recognizing that will drive the cost of health care up for everyone, that and lifetime limits, the fact that if you have coverage, that policies can arbitrarily place lifetime limits on an individual, and for some chronic reoccurring illnesses, it's just inconsistent with how to address those chronic conditions. So those are probably, I think those are two areas that we would be in agreement with. Now, how we address those, I think that we have some differences. As a Republican approach to, and we have bills that we have put in place since July we've introduced, specifically House Resolution 3400, Putting Patients First Act, provides for pre-existing conditions. It forms risk pools that are actually builds on the state risk pools that provides support to those to be done on a state-by-state basis, versus my colleagues who are supporting the Pelosi health care bill, and the bill now being developed within the Senate puts all that at the federal government level.
Well, it seems to me that the people that are going to get hurt are the very people they're trying to help. From what I can gather from this so far, and what I mean by that is, the battle cry for this whole thing, and by the way, I believe we do need health care reform. I don't know that we need to go as drastic as we are here, but I believe there needs to be some health care reform. And I work with a lot of insurance companies, and I've said this to many insurance companies, guys, you better start policing yourself or somebody's going to.
Oh, yeah, and Paul, I agree 100%. We, healthcare, when I was elected to Congress, I came, as you talked about, with 28 years of healthcare experience. I started out as a therapist, a healthcare manager in a rural hospital, licensed nursing home administrator. I've worked inpatient, I've worked outpatient. And I believe that, frankly, there were some things that we should do to make our healthcare system better across all four dimensions, access, quality, affordability, and strengthening that patient choice, decision-making between the patient and the physician. And so there were many things that I know I have been working on since I've come to Congress. Many of that's been embedded in legislation such as H.R. 3400 that would increase access and affordability by allowing individuals to purchase their health care across state lines, provides greater competition of picking from providers, would allow business entities to form association health plans, to have greater negotiation leverage with insurance companies.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly those types of things are, I think, would go a long ways. Tort reform. My experience, in my practice, I've seen physicians being driven out of Pennsylvania to other states where the cost of doing business from a medical malpractice perspective is much less.
And that has not been recent. That's 20 years.
That has been 20 years. But it creates a tremendous access issue for all consumers, and especially when you think about, our healthcare needs tend to intensify the older the folks get. You know, in rural America and parts of my district, which are fairly rural, if you don't have physicians, qualified healthcare providers practicing and treating patients in those areas, you do not have access to quality healthcare.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things I've been talking about, Congressman, for over a year now, well, two things is my battle cry. One's term limits. The other one is, I just lost my thought. I hate when that happens. You know, that's a senior moment. Tort reform.
Oh, tort reform.
Oh, my
yes.
goodness. I'm yep. like, it seemed like 9 months to a year before it was even mentioned. Now, I know you guys are talking about it, you know, in your committees and what have you, but it seems to me that's the most obvious thing we should look at first is tort reform, because obviously that's driven the cost up. It's created defensive medicine. I mean, it's just been a snowball effect.
Well, Paul, really has. When you look at the practical impacts of tort reform, nationwide, we spend 26, and I say spend, I mean I think waste, $26 billion in health care dollars on just medical liability premiums. $26 billion that could be, that's cost that we could reduce and take out, bring down from our health care system. And that would make health care more affordable for everyone, because those costs have been ingrained as a part of doing business in health care. And so those costs,
it's figured in the margin.
They get passed along to the consumer,
that's right,
like any other cost of doing business. And that's just a starting point. Now, by conservative estimates, I've heard quotes as high as $200 billion annually is what the cost of the practice of defensive medicine.
Oh, I would not hesitate to think it's in that range. I mean, it's mind-boggling. Every time I go to the doctor, they want to run a bunch of tests. And obviously, many times I know they don't need the test. I've pulled doctors aside and talked to them. And, you know, but in fairness to them, they have to protect their life, you know, their well-being and their practice. And it's become a real issue. We got about a minute left. When I come back, if we can, Congressman, I'd like to talk a little bit more about this, because I don't understand what's the opposition to it. And I don't want you to comment on it now, but what is the opposition to tort reform when it seems to me that it's so obvious that it's something that should be addressed. Now, I know the conservative side's talking about it. It seems like the Democratic side doesn't even want to approach the subject. So when we come back, I want to talk about tort reform and also this concept of single-payer government-run health-controlled health care, because that's really kind of what the Democrats are calling it. Is that right? Or that's what their plan is or intent would be, Congressman?
Well, actually, they're pretty covert about this. They try not to call it publicly single-payer system, but behind closed doors, that they admit that they're looking to create a slippery slope to move in that direction.
Wow, yeah. Well, hey, we're going to take a break right quick. We're talking to United States Congressman Glenn Thompson. Congressman, we certainly appreciate you taking time to come on and be with us, because there's a lot of misinformation about this health care plan. So we'll be right back and continue to talk about health care.
Have you borrowed money from your 401k or 403b? Big mistake. Never borrow money from your retirement plan, no matter what. Many people think it's harmless, but it's anything but. First of all, your money you borrowed isn't just borrowed. It's actually removed from the plan. That means your account won't grow as much as it would have. Second, you have to repay the loan, and that means you're paying taxes twice on the same money. So never borrow from your retirement plan, and if you have to pay it back right away. To learn more about investments, IRAs, retirement planning, mortgages, insurance planning, buying homes, eliminating non-preferred debt, and more, call Paul at Financial Abundance, 814-867-5745. Or check out their website, financialabundanceinc.com. You don't need to know everything if you have a coach teaching you the few right things. Call Paul at 814-867-5745.
Welcome back to the show. This is Paul Nichols, the Investor Coach. I'm joined today, United States Congressman Glenn Thompson, who's been kind enough to take some of his time to be with us. By the way, it is pre-recorded. It's not live this Saturday morning. Congressman, we were talking when we left off a little bit about tort reform, and I think you and I are on the same page in this regard. In fact, I'll tell you, I haven't talked to anyone that opposes it. Personally, and for those people that are novices, because we try to pull back the curtain, tort reform is really all about the limit malpractice suits can be applied. Is that correct, Congressman?
Yeah, that is correct. It is, it's the amount of damages, and it's usually broken down into actual damages and punitive damages, and we have put out there in a number of pieces of legislation, language that I support. Very much so, because it's been tried and tested. There are states that have done very successful tort reform. California, Indiana, Texas. So there's three in particular, and their cost of health care has considerably come down. Not only that, they've stabilized the supply of providers. The physicians are willing to, and other health care providers are willing to practice medicine in those states. I mean, it's very challenging in Pennsylvania to recruit and retain health care providers because of the state. Now, we have our alternative that we put out there. Number one, there's three parts to it. It does not put a cap on actual damages. So if there's actual damages you incurred as a result of medical malpractice, you're reimbursed for those. Mm-hmm. It does put a cap on punitive damages. And the third aspect of it is it requires that the decision be made by a panel of judges, but the judges are required to have health care experience.
Oh, that's key, I think. That's really,
I think so, too. Yeah. And it's proven. This is not speculation. It's been done in other states. Now, here's the sad part about the Pelosi health care bill, and I assume this will be a portion of what the Senate is considering, is the only thing that is addressed in terms of tort reform in that bill is the fact that it does not allow states to place any kind of caps on any damages. So it actually preempts those states that have brought down the cost of health care and requires them to negate any kind of caps that they place on punitive damages. That's just wrong.
It's devoid of common sense. I don't see how it helps the situation at all. I mean, what's their motivation? I don't get it.
Well, I think there's a couple ways to tear it apart, and I've tried to do that. I always, when I'm solving a problem, I like to try to drill down and find out what the root cause mm-hmm. of something is. Mm-hmm. And I find two issues when it comes to my colleagues, mostly Democrats, who are pushed, that do not want any limits, do not want any type of tort reform. The first is the academic discussion. They'll make the argument, I've heard them do this, I don't agree with it, that we need medical liability, full medical liability exposure, no limits, because it keeps patients safer. Well, I happen don't believe that's true.
I don't either.
You know, patient safety comes from, from self-policing. It comes from, other standards. It comes from, good information.
It's got nothing to do with what the legal limits are going to be for a payout.
No, and in fact, I think because I believe this, and I will say I don't have any statistic to back this up, but my speculation, this is based on my observation of healthcare over 30 years, is that because we cash strap, we financially bankrupt the healthcare system because of medical liability costs, we have to make cuts in other areas that result in exposure to patient safety issues. So I think actually it contributes. The high medical liability premiums actually contributes to patient safety issues. You know, because when you start to have to, if you're a hospital or a provider, and you have to start cutting back because of these increasing, escalating costs that you can't afford to do, you know, sometimes you make costs where you don't want to make costs, and in the end, that can result in harm.
Well, just for people that may just be joining us, we're talking to the United States Congressman Glenn Thompson, who has 30 years in the healthcare industry as a background, so he's not coming from a position of ignorance, but one of expertise more than, you know, obviously there's other senators and congressmen and persons that are medical people, but predominantly they're mostly in the law arena. Would that be true as far as vocations?
Although I will say that, and I appreciate that, because I've really tried to approach healthcare from the standpoint of someone who was involved in a compassionate, caring healthcare profession for 3 decades. Someone who's focused, you know, I spent my life really trying to make a difference in the lives of people who are facing life-changing disease and disability, and that's how I've approached this healthcare debate, not from a Republican or a Democrat, conservative or liberal perspective, but really what works for healthcare and what will bring down costs, increase access, preserve and increase quality, and obviously preserve the decision-making relationship between the patient and the physician. And I'm a part of a freshman class that was really blessed, although it's normally, I think the tradition has been people with law degrees, attorneys that run for Congress. I will say that there's a significant number of healthcare professionals in this year's class, and not just Republican, but also Democrat, and fine individuals that have 25, 30 years of experience or more as physicians. I know, and a Republican and Democrat, top of my head, I can think of colleagues who are a liver specialist, a family practice physician, cardiac specialist, OBGYN, all left their medical practices to come to serve in Congress. Unfortunately, Paul, I will tell you that none of us on either side of the aisle, despite that kind of experience, were invited into the back room to put these healthcare bills together.
Well, and that saddens me, and you know, whenever politics get involved, but it is, we live in a political world, that's how it is, it gets a little frustrating. This is why I get on my soapbox about term limits once in a while, but I want to read this to you, just to segue, if I may, because this is from a communication you had put out, and I found this to be very interesting. You'd made a point that a single-payer government-run system, controlled health system, was predominantly what the Democrats and the current administration was focusing on. And then you go on to say 2 out of every 3 practicing physicians oppose medical overhaul under consideration in Washington as it is today. And 45% of physicians have said they would consider leaving their practice or taking early retirement. This one blew my mind. Keep in mind, 50% of physicians are more than 50 years old. Do we have a blatant deficit of young physicians coming in as a result of all the crapola, for lack of a better word, that's going on with this issue?
Well, we actually have been in a very poor position even prior to these bills, prior to this year. You know, one of the things I've looked at very closely, even prior to deciding to run for Congress over the past couple of years, is what is happening to our healthcare system, specifically in rural America, rural Pennsylvania, our area, as a result of the baby boomer generation retiring.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to tell you, we are going to lose, we have lost already, and are going to lose a lot of healthcare professionals.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just not physicians. This is nurses, therapists, technicians, all folks who are the same generation I am, and will be retiring. And the fact is, it has made it very difficult to recruit and retain new professionals into both rural and underserved urban areas of the country. And the fact is that this bill is like piling on. If this were a football game, the Pelosi bill would definitely get a yellow flag, because this is piling on and just intensifying that problem. You think about it, and it's an accurate statistic that over 50% of our physicians are more than 50 years old in Pennsylvania. And yet, and as I go around, and that was a you know, a survey was done. But as I go around and I talk with these physicians, because I did a lot of that as a part of this healthcare bill process, you know, what I hear is why should I bother? I mean, why should I practice another 5, 10, 15 years and lose my life savings? Because with the healthcare bill proposal, the Medicare cuts are approximately $500 billion. And today, Medicare pays on the average 80 to 90 cents for every dollar of cost that a doctor or hospital has.
People don't realize that.
Medical assistance pays 40 to 60 cents for every dollar cost. You know, the number one reason, in my opinion, based on my experience, that commercial health insurance is so expensive is because government creates these entitlements and then systematically underfunds them. And as a result, when the doctor or the physician goes to negotiate with a commercial insurance company, they have to get the national average, I believe, is 140% of cost. So for every dollar of cost to provide you treatment, the commercial health insurance pays $1.40. And the only reason that is because of the what Medicare and medical assistance does not pay. And so as we see Medicare cuts scheduled, that is only bad news for reimbursements for our healthcare providers, both hospitals, physicians, all healthcare providers. But at the same time, it gets compounded when you look at the public option, because the public option will be affordable. It will be a lot less cost than a commercial health insurance policy. And the reason for that is the public option, by first definition, was only going to pay Medicare costs. It was 80 to 90 cents on a
subsidized
dollar.
Cost, yeah, whatever.
So as that consumes the commercial insurance market, it essentially is going to leave our providers, our hospital, and our doctors in red ink and eventually in bankruptcy. Now, there was a change to that with the Pelosi bill. They took out the dictating that would pay Medicare rates, and what they said was providers would negotiate with the government. I don't think that ever goes well for anyone negotiates with the government.
Well, you know, Glenn, in my experience, and I'm an entrepreneur, self-made, and I like to pride myself as someone who's got some common sense, I haven't seen too many things that the government's gotten into that have really turned out like we wanted them to. I mean, they try, and I understand, but I'll tell you, I'm a little frustrated, and I think that's where most Americans are. And when we see all this, we've lost so much credibility in the politics in the last couple of years, I think, with so many people are just throwing their hands up. I get people telling me all the time, they're just kind of tired, you know, they're just kind of wore down. And you guys are fighting hard inside. I know both you're behind doors fighting for your cause, and the other folks are fighting for theirs. But unfortunately, it's got to be paid for somehow. So anytime anyone's, you know, it reminds me of this, long-term care. Social Security Administration came out a few years ago, made it very clear in your Social Security statement that comes around your birthday that long-term care is something you need to take responsibility for. What a lot of people don't realize is they think Medicare is going to take care of them. What's this bill going to do to long-term care when we've got roughly 30% of our federal budget for Pennsylvania that goes toward Medicaid?
Oh, it's going to be devastating, actually, from a couple of different perspectives. First of all, we'll talk about two different things related to that. One is we'll start with the Medicaid, and then we can talk about the Medicare cuts, which, you know, has tremendous impact. You know, medical assistance, part of this bill was the fact that it raised the eligibility level from up to 150% of poverty, which is a huge increase. It's going to expand the medical assistant roles tremendously.
Mm-hmm. You mean more people will qualify?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. In all states, in particular Pennsylvania, which is, I think, used to be numbered. And medical assistance obviously is a means based healthcare system compared to Medicare, which is for the most part age based, age 65 eligibility. Mm-hmm. But medical assistance is somewhere around over $2.5 billion increase over 10 years. Now the Pelosi bill kicks in some money, thanks to the taxes and the fees that are imposed to pay for it, but just for the first couple of years. And then after that, states like Pennsylvania are on their own. And these medical assistant roles, to see an increase of, let's say, over $2 billion over the 10-year period, well, we all know what the budget cycle was like, how painful that was in Pennsylvania this past year. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know how Pennsylvania would be able to handle that. There was a governor in Tennessee. He's actually a Democratic governor, and he coined it perfectly. He called this health care bill, the medical assistance provisions in it, the mother of all unfunded mandates.
Well, and you know, you couple that with the fact, and these are a couple year old numbers, but I believe Pennsylvania is the second or third oldest state in residents.
Absolutely.
So you're talking about a lot of older people are going to be affected in our state, Pennsylvania, and Florida is right up there too. Florida and PA, I understand, are the two older states. But
yeah, and to add insult to injury with this, so we're not only this will be the taxpayers of Pennsylvania will be faced with this enormous bill, but we're not only going to be paying for those folks, those Pennsylvanians who will qualify, but we're going to pay for states like Nevada and Louisiana too, mm-hmm. because. As the bill was written in the Senate, Senator Reid from Nevada, he exempted the state of Nevada from that provision. So they will not be paying their fair share or any share actually on that. The cost to provide that expanded eligibility in Nevada will have to be spread all around the other states in the country. And then most recently, in negotiations you made of. Might have seen Senator Landry from Louisiana was playing Deal or No Deal. I guess there's a game show.
Right.
They tell me out there. I don't get a lot of time to watch TV anymore.
Yeah, right.
But she was winning at Deal or No Deal because she got like a $300 million gift within the health care bill that would go to the state of Louisiana to subsidize the expanded medical assistant roles. In that state, and the reason they did that was to buy her vote.
I've been hearing some of those types of things. We need to take a quick break. You're listening to It's Your Money. My name's Paul Nichols. I'm your host. I'm joined by the Honorable Congressman Glenn Thompson. We'll be right back. If you need a second opinion, you know where to get it, right here at Financial Abundance. We do that sort of thing all the time. If you get a set of recommendations or a proposal from an advisor, get a second opinion. We are happy to provide it to you. If what you are doing, you're not sure about, or you're not certain about the fees, you're not certain about the risk, you're not certain about the diversification, you're not certain about the redundancy inside of the fund, you're not even sure about the fund itself. Are you doing what's suitable for your situation? If you're not sure, ask. We are happy to help you figure it out. Just call us anytime during the week at 814-867-5745 or check out our website, financialabundanceinc.com. Again, it's 814-867-5745 or our website, www.financialabundanceinc.com. Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Paul Nichols. I am joined by U.S. Congressman Glenn Thompson, who, if you're just joining us, we're talking about the health care plan or debate that's going on right now. And Congressman Thompson has almost 30 years in the health care field, which really brings a different light to this issue because he's coming not from a perspective of ignorance, but he really does understand the healthcare issues and the healthcare industry and how it works. So we really appreciate you taking your time to be on the show with this congressman, because I've gotten a number of calls from my clients, a number of calls that are really, they're concerned about this healthcare plan and all the sound bites that are being thrown out there. So what we're trying to do, as we normally do on our show, is pull back the curtain and bring some clarity to this issue. And we left off in the last one talking a little bit about the single-payer government-run controlled health care system, which seems to be what the left side of the Democrats are pushing through. And we talked about how this would affect the Medicare Advantage program. And I want to read this, Congressman. You'd put this in a communique. 25% of our seniors in this country are enrolled in Medicare Advantage. A study in California showed these enrolled in Advantage plans spent 30% fewer days in the hospital and were 15% less likely to be remitted to a hospital. So obviously, Medicare Advantage is working, I guess, right?
Oh, yeah. It's a good program. And as you noted, there are a significant amount of seniors across the country. And in the 5th Congressional District, right there in Center County, they're enrolled in that program. It's a program that does cost a little more to roll it out, and I think that's the argument why my folks on the other side of the aisle want to cut that program. But I like to look at cost effectiveness, because that's truly cost benefit is the analysis that I believe that you need to do at making these types of decisions. And as you noted, there are significant, although it costs just a little more to enroll somebody in Medicare Advantage, the cost savings overall, when you start reducing hospital stays by 30%,
mm-hmm.
That's a significant savings overall to the Medicare program.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, on the surface, this bill would cut $162 billion from the Medicare Advantage program. And what is interesting, early in this debate, the president has said a couple times that if you like your insurance, you can keep it. Well, I guess there's a corollary. You can keep it unless you're a senior citizen and enrolled in Medicare Advantage.
Mm-hmm. Then what are they going to do with them?
Well, though that program will be eliminated, and they'll put into the traditional Medicare Part B program, I'm assuming.
Well, let me share this thought with you and see if you agree with this or not, because we want to try to bring things down to a level that the average guy who doesn't read and study this stuff understands. And I like to use the concept of Medicare. You know that if you, in long-term care, because we have a lot of facilities in our area, great-run facilities here in Center County, and they're full, and they've all got waiting lists. And it's interesting because I remember talking to a client one time, and he said, my mother had a long-term care plan. I'm sorry, back that up. She had cash that she was going to pay for long-term care, and she went into a reputable facility here in our area, started paying cash, and after about 4 years, she ran out of money. When she ran out of money, obviously the state's not going to throw poor people out. She had spent her assets down, so she went on the Medicaid program for long-term care. What's interesting is she went from one wing of the facility to the other wing, and I remember this gentleman kind of balking a little bit about that, and I said, look, it's dollars and cents. If you're over here paying $150 a day, you're going to get, you know, three shifts of nurses. If you're over here and Medicaid can only afford to pay $70 a day, you can't keep as many nurses there. So I don't think people understand that it has to be paid for somewhere by someone. Whether it be, you know, when we throw these dollars around, in other words, what I'm saying is they're talking about free health care. This concept of free health care is what I think a lot of people are latching on to, and I don't see any of it being free.
No, there's no such thing as free health care. I mean, a lot of people will say, well, look at the Medicare program, look at medical assistance. And I think, in my heart, I believe that both of those programs were set up with the best of intentions. Medicare coming out in the 1960s with a change to the Social Security Act that enabled that. But almost immediately, they've determined that they couldn't afford somebody had to be paying that bill, so the people paying that bill were the taxpayers. And unfortunately, what they found is they couldn't afford to do that. So they began to reduce the amount that they pay, and that's why today...
Well, it's dollars and cents. It's not a matter of wanting to.
Yeah, and right. And here's the thing. Within the Pelosi health care bill that we voted on here a number of weeks ago, there was a recognition of that phenomenon happens. Within the section 101, it was like it's page 26 of that 2030 page bill. There's a section there that has to do with high risk pull. Those are the individuals with pre-existing conditions. Those are the people who have a challenging time purchasing affordable health insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And within that language, codified in that language specifically, it said that, well, first of all, it identified like $5 billion, taxpayer dollars, that would go to help provide for these. This coverage for these individuals, but then it said when that money is no longer when that money is all gone, it enabled the secretary, and I assume this was the Secretary of Health and Human Services, to do three things: to increase premiums to those individuals, to cut benefits, and to create waiting lists. And so, within the language of the bill, it recognizes that although they're doing this, they're not going to be able to afford it, and that down the road we'll see rationing of services. We see that today with Medicare Part B, with mm-hmm. Folks who go into skilled nursing facilities. There's actually just a few years ago, there was placed a cap, a limitation on the amount of therapy services that you could receive if you were on medical assistance and had Medicare Part B in the nursing home. And it's about somewhere around $1,900 a year, and which has nothing to do whether you have a disability or an illness that requires therapy. It's just a recognition that the government can't afford to meet all the needs.
Let me ask you this. As it relates, and I appreciate that explanation on Medicare, and to me it's common sense, Congressman. I mean, you know, you can't squeeze blood from a turnip. There's only so much money to go around, and the money's got to come from somewhere. And as a small business owner that employs people, I'm concerned that, you know, as my wife said to me something the other night, I said, well, if we're in business in a couple of years after this, I mean, if they start forcing me, the government and new health care plan forces us to provide or fines us. I was reading something about a fine for those people at small businesses that may not provide health care. It's cheaper to pay a fine than it would be to provide the care.
Yeah, it's an 8% fine that's collected by the Internal Revenue Service.
Unbelievable. It just boggles my mind. But the point that I wanted to get to was, and really kind of tie all this together, the time that you've spent with this, what is the battle cry that is scaring people that's not real? In other words, what is it that is being told out there that has been skewed and had to put a political spin on that we need to unspin for people out there?
Well, I think you've touched on part of it. Certainly the death panels is one that is just wrong. I explained that earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that, yeah, I believe people should have the facts. We don't scare people. You don't make things up. The other thing is the fact is that the Republicans, we do care about the health care for citizens in America. We happen to believe that, and we've got some pretty good alternatives that would bring down the cost of health care, increase access. Some of the things that I hear in the media is that, Republicans have no alternatives. We have nothing else we're proposing. We're just the party of no. And that's not the case. In fact, those of us with healthcare experience, and there's quite a few of us in my caucus, we are the party of no, KNOW.
Right.
We know healthcare,
mm-hmm.
and we've got good alternatives out there that we deserve to have a fair hearing. These are things that won't require tax increases, will not require cuts to Medicare. But we'll bring down the cost of health care by many of the things we've talked about throughout this program.
You know, it reminds me of the bully when I was in school, the kid that would ask for my milk money, you know. It kind of reminds me of that type of thing that's happening. Hey, now we've got a position of power, and, you know, this is just how it's going to be. And that alarms me as a patriot and American, but what really alarms me is all the fear-mongering that's been going on over this whole issue. And it's really scaring older people certainly the last group of people that need to be taken advantage of and scared. What can we do to get educated, Congressman? I mean, really educated about this issue, because obviously you and I both believe that education is key. That's what my show is all about. That's why you're on it. And you're certainly taking time to educate people. Where can they go to other sources and not get so much spin and a little bit more or the real scoop?
Well, Paul, I think that's a great thing. There's two things I encourage people to do: to educate, and that's themselves, and then to advocate, and that's to be active in this process. So, be active by contacting your elected officials, weighing in, let them know that you know the facts, and this is how things will affect your life. These are to be the intended consequences and the unintended consequences, which are just as important to be able to determine. In terms of educating, there's a number of groups out there that I would offer up that have weighed in on this. I think they're fairly balanced. The National Rural Health Association is a good organization, and I don't have their websites or anything.
That's all right. We'll get it out to people.
Yeah, the Lewin Group, LEWIN, is another nonpartisan group that has looked at this issue, and I think does a pretty credible job of exploring it. And finally, I'd throw out the Kaiser Foundation.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, familiar with them.
As a good group. Mm-hmm. You know, we try very hard I'm a firm believer, because I work for the citizens of the 5th District, frankly, they're the people I'm accountable to. I'm here to serve them. We work very hard to communicate. So our website, thompson.house.gov, we've got information that are always updating. almost on a daily basis. We've got an electronic newsletter people can sign up for that we send information out. And we've just, I've just got an open-door policy of whether it's sending a letter or an email or scheduling a visit or a phone call. Those are all things that, is to me, is very, very important. When I'm here to serve the citizens of the 5th District. I'm fond of saying that when I worked in healthcare, I only had one boss, changed over a course of 30 years. But today I work for 660,000 really smart people.
Yeah, and I appreciate you taking time. One thing I can say, you know, regardless of your political affiliation, ladies and gentlemen, there are certain politicians in my life that, you know, you try to get involved, and some respond and welcome it, and some just give you the cold shoulder. And I'd have to say, Senator, that we've certainly not gotten a cold shoulder from you at all. Far before we ever met here, my wife had just sent emails and got correspondence. And so we appreciate your service, and we want to encourage you to fight the good fight. Obviously, you believe you're right. They believe they're right. Hopefully, we'll find something in the middle that's going to benefit Americans as a whole. And I strongly encourage people to go to the website, Thompson. It's thompson.house.gov?
Yes.
Two dots. Thompson.house.gov. Get on the newsletter. That's how I found out about some of the information I'll tell you, here's the challenge. Where do you go to get the real information? I mean, we can go to your website, but you can't. Ladies and gentlemen, you hear me say it all the time. You can't watch a mainstream media and get any news. It's nothing but sensationalism. I call it investment pornography as it relates to the investment channels. But the real news is where. You have to really use some discernment and go to the website and really be careful where you're getting your news. I think that's become more of an issue in our country today than ever before.
Well, I think you touched on it when you mentioned discernment. That is an incredibly important skill today, discerning what is right and what is misleading.
Yes. Sir, I thank you for your time. I really appreciate you taking time out of your very busy schedule. You're certainly welcome anytime, and we appreciate the enlightenment that you've shared. And hopefully we can get some people motivated out there to pick up the phone and call your rep or send them an email or show up at a meeting. And let's just, regardless of your view, get involved one way or the other. And that's the only way that your view is going to be heard. So, Congressman, thank you so much, sir, for your time.
Well, thank you very much. It's been a privilege to talk with you.
Thank you. We'll see you down the road. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I hope this finds you well. I hope it's been an enriching show for you, getting Congressman Thompson to come on the show. And, you know, I get so many inquiries of late over this health care plan. I figured it's best just to go right to the source. And I knew that we had that option available. That is Congressman Thompson, who's right in the thick of it all. Regardless of what side of the aisle you're on, what I'm trying to do with the show is, as we try every week, to really pull back the curtain and muddle through the minutiae and the hype and all the fear-mongering that's going on with the media. I remember watching Walter Cronkite recently. Obviously, he's passed away, but an interview with him recently before he had died, and he would said, you know, there's no such thing as news anymore the way that he sees it. And so the idea of today was to pull back the curtain on the healthcare plan and share with you some information that hopefully was enlightening. But I think many of you will agree, we all need to get involved a little bit and let your voices be heard. And hopefully, collectively, left, right, in the middle, these folks will come out with something that's productive and helpful and supportive of certainly our elderly and our healthcare needs moving forward. So anyway, this is Paul Nichols, the Investor Coach, pulling back the curtain as we normally do. You're listening to WBLF 970 AM and 103.7 FM Talk in Chambersburg. We will talk to you next week. We have a great show. We're going to really pull back the curtain on the inner workings of insurance as an investment. Have a great day. We'll talk to you later. Is your financial advisor putting his money where his mouth is? Too many financial advisors tell their clients to buy investments that they would never invest in themselves. In fact, Morningstar has revealed that only 47% of U.S. stock fund managers personally own the funds they manage. More than half of the fund managers don't even invest their own money in the funds we're supposed to put our life savings in. Is the story same for the person who's giving you your investment advice? Ask your financial advisor if he has invested his own money in the same funds he has told you to buy. At Financial Abundance, we personally own the very same investments we are recommending to our clients. That's how we've done it for years. So you can see why we are so motivated to help our clients succeed. Because when our clients succeed, so do we. So call us at 814-867-5745 and see how we can help you. That's 814-867-5745. or visit our website, financialabundanceinc.com.